all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today, Jason Redman. Jason is a retired Navy SEAL. And Jason, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Jim, I'm honored to be on. Thanks for having me.
Well, you spent 20 years of your life dedicated to this country and serving first 10 years as an enlisted Navy SEAL and then 10 years as a officer leading SEAL teams. You've fought, unfortunately, everywhere our country's sent you, Iraq, Afghanistan, down south in some of the drug wars. I mean, you've got a quite colorful career. I know you come from a military family. So did you sort of always know, hey, I'm going to go into the military and I'm going to end up being a career man?
Yeah, I definitely, that was definitely my focus. I don't think I ever wanted to do anything differently. I think for a hot minute, maybe when I was three, my parents told me I ran around with a fire helmet on, but that quickly changed to the military, and I just have my sights set on that all the way up until the moment that I went in.
Well, you enlisted and did 10 years there, and then were selected in, I think it was about 2000, to the prestigious Seaman to Admiral program. As you made that transition from officer, or from enlisted to officer, tell us what you were thinking about.
Well, it was kind of interesting. I mean, to be perfectly honest, it was pre 9/11. So for anybody out there, and I know this is Veterans Radio, so I'm sure we have a lot of veterans. For those of us who served pre 9/11, it was kind of an interesting group of years, because there was a lot of training. War wasn't necessarily at the forefront of everybody's mind. We obviously had fought the Cold War in the 80s. We were kind of fighting proxy wars with the drug war down in Central and South America. So when I looked at becoming an officer, I kind of had a couple of options. I had a couple of options where I could continue on the enlisted route and go to some higher level operational capabilities, or I came from, a family of officers. And I just kind of felt like, well, I think this may be a better move for the long term for my career. Can I have a bigger impact? Those were some of the thoughts that led to that decision. I'll be honest, if 9/11 had gone down sooner, I probably would not have taken that road. I probably would have stayed enlisted. So it was kind of interesting what led to those decisions.
Another good example of life is never a straight line, and no matter how the hell we plan it, it's going to go where it goes, and you got to take those opportunities that present themselves, don't you?
Yep, absolutely. And I'm glad it worked out the way it did. I mean, it was an amazing path, but it was kind of funny. I tell people, especially a lot of the younger guys I meet now who are interested in a military career or even a career in special operations, after I got injured and I was non-operational, I looked for different things, hey, what are some jobs that I can do to finish out my career? And there was one of the things specifically, I love dogs. So I'm like, hey, can you put me in the dog program? And they were like, no. You're an officer. Here's a desk, man. You're going to go manage stuff.
Well, let's just touch on
pretty funny.
Yeah, let's just touch on this briefly. As I said at the before we started recording with Jason Redman, we could spend the whole time talking about his military career. We could spend his whole time about the firefight in Fallujah, Iraq, in September of 2007, when he was the assault force commander going after an Al-Qaeda high-value target, and the team came under heavy machine gun fire and small arms fire, and in that engagement, you were shot twice in the arm and once in the face. resulting in some significant injuries and a long recovery and surgical program. Give us the short version of that, because while we could spend 20 minutes on that, I want to back up in your career and talk about something that some life lessons you learned along the way.
Yeah, Jim, and I'll tee you up for success with this one, because the reality is what we're getting ready to talk about, which was some of the incidents that occurred to me on the leadership spectrum of being a young officer, and some of the stumbles along the way really led me, set me up for success when I was injured. So when I was injured, you know, as opposed to the majority of our wounded warriors who are a lot younger, the bulk of our wounded warriors are younger infantry guys, and they're between the ages of 18 and maybe 25. I was 30 when I got wounded. I'd been in the military, or even a little bit older than that. I'd been in the military 2007, 92, so 15 years at that point. And I had been through quite a bit in my career. I'd had ups and downs, I had failures, I had successes. I'd really come to understand through those failures and successes what it is to lead and what it is to deal with adversity. So some severe injuries, obviously it took 4 years, almost 40 surgeries to put me back together. I didn't want to get out. I wanted to stay in the military and continue on my career, but unfortunately my injuries kind of limited that. And got to do some great things. You know, after my injuries, I worked in operations, I worked training, I worked some special projects, but finally reached a point at about 19 years where I realized that there really wasn't much of a future for me without totally changing my job. The SEAL teams are built on operational billets, our officer billets, our operator billets. You know, there's a certain career path of operational billets that you have to have. And if you are injured, if you are unable to fill those billets, then at some point your career just kind of stops because you're not able to keep going. And I kind of saw the writing on the wall and decided at that point that maybe it was time to start the second phase of my life, which led to my medical retirement and getting out of the military at about 21 years.
And we're going to back up now, because I think it's important, first, you know, everybody to realize that, you know, you're a hell of a warrior. You had real experiences out there, and you had some real life lessons. And that's what I want you to pass along maybe to some of our veteran radio listeners. And that is, as a young officer, you had some setbacks. You had to learn some new virtues like humility, and shake some old virtues like being arrogant. Talk to us a little bit about that period of life where it was really pretty formative.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it really shaped me. And like I said, I think that journey set me up for success from my injuries, and a very, very humbling journey. I was fortunate that I excelled at a young age as a young enlisted SEAL. I came in, I was very young. I was 17. I was still in high school when I joined the military. Graduated high school, had just turned 18, headed off to boot camp. Went through SEAL training at 19 and was a young SEAL, you know, right there at 19, and then started to excel, did multiple platoons, was doing some counter drug work in Central and South America, became a training instructor, and then was selected for commission and went through this commissioning program, ranked very high out of this commissioning program, ended up becoming the battalion commanding officer for the Hampton Roads ROTC Consortium, which at that time was one of the largest ROTC consortiums on the East Coast. And the reason I'm telling you all this is to kind of set the table for how I had excelled. And oftentimes when we're younger and we excel, we sometimes can start to take for granted our successes and even our own leadership abilities. And then I often tell people I started to walk with two companions, ego and arrogance. And all of this was leading it to that commissioning time, which for me was May of 2004. And here I was, you know, thinking to myself, man, I'm gonna crush this. I've you know, I've excelled in all these areas in my life. I've excelled as an enlisted SEAL. You know, I've excelled in this commissioning program. And now I'm getting ready to go back to the SEAL teams as a young SEAL officer. And I'm going to excel at that, too. But there were a lot of things that had happened that had changed dramatically everything. And one of those things, obviously, was 9/11. I started school. 9/11 happened after I started school. But during that time I was gone, the 3-year period, obviously everyone in the military was, we were engaged in two wars at that point. We were engaged in Afghanistan and we were engaged in Iraq. And for the SEAL teams and the majority of the military, you know, we had been in a training, pre-9/11 military had really been in a training mindset. We had trained a lot, and from training, we tend to operate off when was the last time we saw any kind of sustained combat, and the SEAL teams were no different. So and what happened is when 9/11 occurred, we quickly learned that for us, Vietnam was the last time we had seen long-term sustained combat. So a lot of the tactics and things that we were utilizing pre-9/11 were still based off a lot of the Vietnam era tactics that our old hardened warriors from Vietnam had brought back. And guys on the ground quickly realized that the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, those tactics didn't work. We had to really adapt to urban environments. We had to adapt to the close quarters combat we were encountering. We adapted to mobility operations and a lot of new and different things. I stepped back in as a brand new officer thinking, hey, I've got all this experience. I'm going to be great. I know everything. And I didn't. I didn't because everything had changed overnight. And not only that, I had left and we had very few guys who had combat experience. And I stepped back into an organization that, you know, at that point, 2004, probably 50-60% of the organization had combat experience. And this is where ego and arrogance are dangerous allies, because instead of humbling myself and saying, you know what, guys, I might be a prior enlisted guy and I might have some experience, but you guys are doing things totally different now and I don't know how to do them. So, you know, can you teach me? Hey, you know, petty officer so-and-so, can I learn from you? Because I don't know. And instead, my pride got in the way and I just put my head down and I kept trying to grind through and figure things out without really, you know, thinking that it was a weakness as a leader to seek out help from others who may have more experience from you. And that really is just a sign of weakness and immaturity in a leader. Good leaders recognize, you know, their people are going to have vast more talent than they do. If you're a great leader, you're going to surround yourself with people like that. And, you know, you don't have to know everything, but you definitely can learn from them and at least understand the process. And I didn't do that in the beginning. And all of that led me down the road.
And that's a hard lesson to learn. And at times you get yourself to be isolated and sort of a loner, and you're damaging the hell out of your reputation, and you may not even know it.
Absolutely. Well, I didn't know it. And not only that, Jim, I was doing what so many of us do when we're struggling. I added alcohol to the mix. So at night, you know, after we were done training, guys would go out, and I would go out and drink my sorrows away over my frustration. And obviously I knew I wasn't performing at the level. I could tell the guys were frustrated with me. I knew I wasn't operating at the level I should be. And instead of humbling myself, you know, I started drinking, which only further eroded my credibility as a leader.
And there's another twist that happened in your career that I want to talk about, because I think so many guys get to this brink. And that is, as this is going downhill and you see it going downhill, you know, you try to correct it, but you really get to the brink of quitting. And I think it's easy to get to that brink, but it's hard to say, I'm not going to cross that line. You got to that brink. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I got to that brink, and it all kind of came to a head on my first combat deployment in Afghanistan. And I made a bad call on that deployment. I made a decision on a mission that was just a bad call. And thankfully, nobody was killed. You know, there was no major incident from it other than it just further damaged my professional reputation. And it was at that point that there were some people, guys, you know, sound SEALs, sound operators who were like, hey, get rid of this guy. He's dangerous. You know, he's making bad decisions, and we've seen a series of things, you know, talking about training, things like that, drinking, and all of it came together to this perfect storm. So, my leadership, you know, basically I went before a board, and there were some guys there who were like, hey, get rid of him. And thankfully I had some leadership who said, no, this is a good guy. He's got good potential. We need to humble him. We need to bring him back down to earth. We need him to understand what are his strengths and weaknesses as a leader. And there were a series of growth opportunities they gave me. And one of those growth opportunities was they sent me to U.S. Army Ranger School. And Ranger School, at its heart and soul, is a leadership school forged in hardship. You know, it's designed to be difficult. You know, they do that with lack of food. They do that with a lot of constant physical activity and lack of sleep and, you know, hard, complex problems. You're moving all the time. And I got to Ranger School, and I'll be honest, I was bitter about it. I was bitter about being there. At this point, I'd been in the military for 13 years. And I once again, ego and arrogance, I still saw myself as better than that. And I failed the land nav course on the third day of Ranger School. And this was something that I had taken pride in. I taught land nav when I was an instructor. I knew how to land nav good. And it really, that failure was once again just due to arrogance, because I kicked around at the beginning of the land nav course and waited for the sun to rise thinking that, oh, I'm so good, I could knock out this 6-point course that should take 6 hours and 3 hours of daylight. And I didn't. I failed it. And, you know, the Ranger instructor started giving me a lot of grief for being a SEAL who couldn't navigate. And, you know, those prior 6 months of failures and everything that had happened kind of boiled up, and I exploded, and pretty much, you know, they basically said, are you quitting? And I said, yes. So I had to go to see the Ranger Colonel. And this is where an amazing things, oftentimes fate plays such a big hand, fate, God moments, however you want to look at it. But when I met the Ranger Colonel the next morning, he happened to be friends with probably one of the most respected SEAL leaders we had. And, that SEAL leader, he got him on the phone, and I basically, you know, gave him the sob story, how I'd been thrown under the bus and, oh, woe is me. And, you know, so often, when we have big problems like that, we have a tendency to look around at everything else. We want to find all the external factors, and we don't want to look at ourselves. And I was doing the same thing. And I made a statement to him that I never was going to be able to get the guys to follow me again. I had made too many mistakes. Like, even if I finished Ranger School and went back to the community, nobody would follow me again. And he gave me the most succinct and sound and powerful leadership advice I've ever been given. I give it to everybody else I meet. And that was this: people will follow you if you give them a reason to. You could mess up quite a bit, but if you are a sound leader, if you're leading yourself, people naturally want to follow you because you're making good decisions and you're driving an organization or a team in the right direction. People just naturally follow good leaders. And he said, go back to that Rangers, go back to that course, you know, kick it in the ass, finish, and come back and give the guys a reason to follow you.
That was from a leader you respected. And so it really sort of pierced through that ego and arrogance and woe is me attitude you had at that point, didn't it?
It did. And I really needed it. And for the first time in my career, I started to take a look at myself and realize that I'd been blaming everybody and everything for why I was there, and all the problems and the setbacks and all the issues I'd had. And finally, for the first time, I kind of took a step back and was like, hey, dude, this is all your fault. You know, this was poor decision making on your part. This was ego and arrogance. It was your unwillingness to really humble yourself and come to learn the way we're doing things. You know, all of this led to you being where you are right now, and you are the focal point of that.
And that's a hard lesson for anybody to learn, particularly in that setup. And I want to transition now, because, you know, before the time will run out, and I want to talk about After you got out, and we're talking to Jason Redman, a retired Navy SEAL officer, 10 years enlisted, 10 years as an officer, had a lot of adversity, has gotten out, and is now a speaker and author. And you've got two books. Your original New York Times bestseller was The Trident, The Forging and Reforging of a Navy SEAL Leader. And the new one that's out, Overcome. So talk to us about both of them so that folks can say, hey, I got to go get one or both of these because I'm hearing something that resonates with me.
Yeah, Jim, absolutely. Thank you for that. The Trident came out in 2013, and it is that journey, that young man's journey, my journey of a young leader from ego and arrogance to failure, and then building myself back up. How did I go through that process of, you know, really getting back on track as a young leader and earning back the respect of my teammates? Went through that process, redeemed myself, was operating at a high level in another combat deployment in Iraq. And at the very end of that deployment, got myself on the receiving end of a machine gun ambush, an Al-Qaeda machine gun ambush, and myself and my teammates got all shot up. Very intense gunfight. One of the closest, we ended up having to call fire directly on our position. The closest fire mission in the entire Iraq war. And survived. And of course, that started a whole new journey of leadership I came to learn. And that was the journey of being put back together and maintaining a positive attitude and driving forward and trying to lift others up. So that is the Trident. Did very well. It was a New York Times bestseller. Overcome was the second component to it, because what would happen is Trident was written as a memoir. So it's more of a story of my military career. And obviously, there's a lot of inherent lessons in the book, but they are not broken out into step-by-step processes. You know, we didn't break them apart. And Overcome really is the secondary part of the Trident, where we took a lot of the lessons that are in the Trident, we really kind of ripped them apart. And we broke it down into something that I call life ambushes. I talk about the fact that everybody in life, I survived an enemy ambush, but everybody in life gets ambushed. When I failed as a young leader, that was one of the major life ambushes I went through. And the mechanisms to overcome an enemy ambush, believe it or not, if you retranslate it, how we deal with an enemy ambush into kind of civilian world terms and, you know, what the assets are at a disposal, they're very similar if you approach it in that manner. And we developed something called the REACT methodology on how to get out of a life ambush or how to get off the X. And Overcome is really built around that. And then how you lead yourself, how you make yourself better prepared for future ambushes, how you lead others when we get into an ambush, whether it's personal, whether it's professional, your family is involved in it, your company, your team members, they're involved in it. So how do you motivate and inspire others through adversity? And then the last one, how do we maintain that over the long term? How do we lead always? And those are the three rules of leadership that I'm teaching to companies and individuals.
Well, and Overcome is also based on a bunch of research and interviews you did with some of America's top warriors. Tell that had to been interesting for anyone to have those discussions. So tell us a little bit about those discussions and how they found their way into shaping Overcome and your thoughts on leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. As we were, as we were really looking at the heart and soul of the book and built around this idea of life ambushes, I said, man, it would be amazing to have the perspective of high-level military leaders who are combat experienced, who understand the mechanics of an ambush and even potentially have been in real-world ambushes, but have also encountered life ambushes. And so we started identifying people and reaching out to them. And thankfully, I had a lot who said, yes, I'd be glad to do it. Admiral Bill McRaven, who was the head of the Special Operations Command, who oversaw the bin Laden raid. Admiral Eric Olson was the very first SEAL to become a four-star admiral. He was involved in Somalia Mogadishu in the Black Hawk Down scenario. Actually, he earned a Silver Star in that ambush. General Stan McChrystal, Lieutenant Commander Jocko Willink, who saw some heavy fighting in Ramadi, Commander Mark Devine. I also interviewed several wounded warriors, some Marine wounded warriors who had, been through some pretty damaging situations and came home and really struggled by how they started to launch and find their way forward. So there's a lot of great knowledge in the book. We're getting amazing reviews from it, the people that are reading it. And it's been really nice to have the feedback that people tell me, hey, man, I'm in a life ambush right now, and your book, Overcome, is really helping me to drive forward and get past it.
Well, that's why we wanted to have you on, Jay Redmond, to talk about that and encourage people to pick up one or both of these to kind of help them in their own growth. Now, I suspect that your three children are regularly throwing you life ambushes, so you're still getting to be nimble on your feet on these issues, I take it.
Yeah, I'm pretty blessed. My kids are good. I mean, they're teenagers now, and my older daughter definitely gave us a run for our money, and she was the one that I never expected. She was the golden child, and then she kind of got off track, but now she's back on track. And it's pretty neat. As a parent, sometimes you tell your kids lots of stuff, and you sometimes wonder, do they hear anything I'm saying? And it is neat to see that I see bits and pieces of what I speak about now in my kids' vocabulary, and I watch them tell their kids and the way they drive forward. So, parents, you're not there to be your kids' friends. You're there to lead your kids. And B, if you're leading your kids, they are hearing you. You may question it,
right?
But they are hearing you.
Well, we appreciate you taking some time today, Jason Redmond, for talking to Veterans Radio about some of the life lessons that you've learned over time that you're trying to pass along, and about your new book, Overcome. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, Jim, thank you for having me on.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans' Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Veterans Radio needs you. If you like our shows that are informative, surprising stories, and relevant information on what's happening at the VA and the military, we'd like your support. Individual support of $5 to $50 a month or corporate sponsorship of $1,000 to $10,000 would be welcomed. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsorship or support tab, pay online, and keep Veterans Radio on the air.